Welcome to the Shiznit Podcast. I'm your host, Tanya Wagner. Our first episode is a good one. The author of the Friday Night Knitting Club, Kate Jacobs, is here as our knitter of note. We'll talk picking up and knitting stitches and hear from our musical guest, Ben Soley. Java Men performing our theme Gadzooks, and as I said, this is the Shiznit Podcast. My name is Tanya, and we're going to have an abbreviated first segment here today because there's a really long interview later in the program, so stay tuned for that. But right now, I'm just going to give you an idea of what to expect from the Shiznit Podcast since this is our first episode. And I've been thinking about podcasting over the last year, and in that time, I have developed a pretty good idea of what I wanted the podcast to be. Now, each episode will have three knitting segments. The first, which will normally go here, is a sort of knitter's commentary. This is a place to discuss yarn, review books, and talk about issues that relate to knitters. The second segment is the tutu review. Now, by tutu, I mean Tutorial Tuesday. On www.theshiznit.com, and that's S-H-I-Z-K-N-I-T. I post a new tutorial every week, and each month kind of has a theme. Now, in the podcast, we will discuss the tutorials and really kind of wrap our heads around what the technique means. The final segment is our knitter of note. I'm constantly amazed with knitters and what they create, and this segment gives us a chance to talk to some of them. I have some guests lined up that I'm really excited about, so be sure to listen every month. Now, in addition to the knitting, there's a musical aspect of the podcast. I found that a lot of musicians, particularly indie artists, share the same creative, DIY spirit that knitters do. Each episode will feature a musician. We'll tell you a little bit about the artist and play you a few tracks. That brings me to this month's featured artist, Ben Soley. Though Ben is a classically trained cellist, he has a distinct sound all his own. His unique approach to cello and amazing voice are earning him fans across the globe, a globe that he's currently touring, both solo and with the Sparrow Quartet, which is another group you're really going to want to check out. Now, not only is Ben a talented musician, he's a flat-out great person and doesn't mind when I knit at his shows. Actually, when I mentioned the idea of having him as a featured guest, he said, "I love that it's a knitting podcast." He's very supportive of the knitters. Ben's solo CD, Learning to Bend, hit stores nationwide on June 10th. The first song I ever heard of Ben's is called It's Not Impossible, and I was impressed right away. Here, right now, is It's Not Impossible by Ben Soley. Thank you.
not impossible for me to cry. It's just the hardest thing I've ever done. And it's a shame, you know, but it's ingrained, you know. Boys don't cry, boys don't cry. Where you lived, all I wanted was to say goodbye. I was scared, you know, and I was mad, you know, but boys don't cry, boys don't cry. I can try and try to change your mind, like one man pulling a train down the line. It takes time, I know, but who has time, you know. Boys don't cry, boys don't cry. You can kick and scream, cause a scene, take your anger out on someone else, steal the car, race the car, don't you dare, no, don't you dare cry. And I must admit, all jokes aside, I find some men beautiful, some girls handsome, some children wise. And I hope someday, before I die, I can share the kiss that brings tears to my eyes. And it's a shame, you know, but it's in the brain, you know. Boys don't cry, boys don't cry. No, no, baby. Boys don't cry, boys don't cry. No. For me to cry, it's just the hardest thing I've ever done.
We're gonna hear a little bit more from Ben later in the program. Right now, it's time to get down to business with the 2-2 review. We've all been known to let out a few four-letter words on occasion. Sometimes our knitting just doesn't turn out like we want it to. That's why I decided to post a new tutorial every Tuesday with knitting tips and techniques. In May, we looked at picking up and knitting stitches. I've been known to look at a pattern, say, you have to pick up how many stitches, and put it back down immediately. With these tutorials, you'll never be dissuaded from knitting a pattern because of how many stitches you pick up and knit. Before we start discussing the tutorials, I want to point out the difference in picking up stitches and picking up and knitting stitches. When a pattern tells you to simply pick up stitches, it means transfer stitches to a needle. For example, you may have done a provisional cast on or have held stitches on scrap yarn. You would pick up these stitches by putting them on the needle. Pretty simple, right? Picking up and knitting, which is what we're talking about in the tutorials, occurs when you create a new stitch on your knit fabric. Now let's get to those tutorials. Remember, you can find pictures showing you step-by-step how to pick up and knit stitches on www.theshiznit.com. Always, 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 with every tutorial, we're going to start at examining our knitting because it's hard to know what to do next when you don't know what you already have. So first we're going to talk about picking up and knitting from the cast-on or bound-off edge. And if you look at a piece of stockinette fabric, you'll notice that each stitch kind of makes little Vs. This V is what you're going to stick your needle in to make the new stitch. So you start by simply along the top row of the fabric where you're going to start, we're going to pick up the new stitches. You stick the needle into the center of the V, right between the two little V arms. You want to make sure that you have two loops on the needle, because if you don't go through the fabric all the way, you might end up with a few holes in your knitting, It's why the first pair of socks I ever knit has some holes along the side where I picked up stitches. So you don't want that to happen unless you're going for a whole lacy effect. So once you have your needle stuck through the V, you have the two little loops on your needle, you're going to take your new length of yarn and make a stitch. You do that just like you would any other knit stitch. You know, go around and pull it through. And that's it for picking up and knitting from the top edge. And just keep on all across the cast on or bound off edge. Picking up and knitting on the side edge, it's just a little more tricky. Not too much. It's the same basic operation you're doing with your needles. But rather than having a smooth set of V's, you have loops and bumps. And this is a lot easier to feel than it is to see. So if you run your finger along the side edge of stockinette fabric, you're going to feel little bumps, and in between those bumps are loops. Now, the proportion of stockinette is not even. It's actually about 2/3 as tall as it is wide. And for that reason, you don't pick up in every stitch the same way you would when you're going across. And there's actually an easy way to remember picking up two out of every three stitches and getting the right number of bumps and loops. And it's really simple. It's when you're picking up and knitting, it doesn't matter if you start with a bump or a loop, but just think yourself, loop, bump, skip, bump, loop, skip, loop, bump, skip, bump, loop, skip. And it's, you know, just keep doing that the whole time you're picking up and knitting from the side edge, because if you pick up too many stitches, then you're going to have puckering on the side where you've picked up and knit the stitches, and it's not going to look right. So you want to try to get the right proportion. Well, some patterns actually tell you how many stitches to pick up and knit, and that can be really frustrating, because you have your pattern. Say it says to pick up and knit 50 stitches along the right side, and you start picking up and knitting the stitches, and you get almost to the end and realize you still have 15 stitches to pick up and not enough room. There's actually a really easy way to make sure you pick up the right number of stitches, and you just divide your fabric into sections with safety pins. You can also use the little stitch markers that open if you don't want to stick safety pins in your fabric, but you know, I don't have a problem with it unless you're using really delicate silk or something. So just fold your knitwear in half, the section that you have to pick up and knit from, in half. Place a safety pin in the middle where the fold is. And you can do that as many times for as many sections as you need. So if you have to, let's use, you know, the example of 50 stitches, you might want to divide it into two sections and pick up 25 on each side, or in four sections. Not an even, you know, it doesn't divide evenly, but close enough. And you can do that however many sections you need, and just try to pick up the same number of stitches between each section. Then you have a nice even row of picked up stitches. Not every pattern tells you how many stitches to pick up. For example, I'm currently working on Miss Marigold, which is a zephyr pattern that's really awesome. And along the V-neck, because it's a really deep V, it doesn't tell you how many stitches to pick up and knit. In those cases, what you're going to want to do is think back to your loop, bump, skip, your two out of every three method that we used for, you know, picking up along the side edge. And then from the top, just pick up one from every V. And chances are, you're going to have the right number of stitches. This is also really useful information for if you modify a pattern, because I know I personally hate shirts that are too short. And with knitting, it's really easy to modify and really easy to customize each garment. That's one reason I love knitting so much. So let's say you add a couple of inches to a sweater, so it's a little bit longer for you. Maybe you're kind of short and you want a shorter sweater. So if you do that and you cast on, or I'm sorry, if you pick up and knit the number of stitches that the pattern tells you to, it's not going to work out right. Your buttonhole bands will be off. So just, you know, do the loop bump skip, two out of every three, and one in every V, and you're going to have the right number of stitches. That brings us to another song by this month's featured artist, Ben Zoli. Ben is a really great songwriter, and you know, some of his songs just amazing. But this is actually Ben's version of another artist's song, Sam Cooke. It's called A Change Is Gonna Come. And yeah, I feel like I'm cheating you a little bit by not letting you hear another original Ben Zoli song. But I promise, go out and buy his CD on June 10th. It's called Learning to Bend, and you'll hear lots of amazing songwriting. But right now we have A Change Is Gonna Come, performed by Ben Zoli.
Well, it's dark in the city. I've lost my pride. The lights in the streets hide the stars from my eyes. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know a change is gonna come. And it's too hard living, but I'm afraid to die, 'cause I don't know what's up there, just beyond the sky. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know a change is gonna come. And I miss my family, my little girl. She is my princess, I'd give her the world. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know a change is gonna come. Some kind of belief that this war we're fighting can really bring some peace. There's no rhyme, no reason, no sweet melody. More and more weapons mean less security. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know a change is gonna come. And I've tried to find it, some better place, where having the biggest gun is some kind of race. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know a change is gonna come. I couldn't last for long, but now I think I'm able to carry on. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know change is gonna come. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. It's a change is gonna come.
Huge thank you to Ben for agreeing to be on, and I hope y'all decide to listen to him a little bit while you do your knitting. So, and you know, no matter where you are in the world right now, chances are Ben is coming to your town. So go to his website, www.bensoli.com, and see if he's going to be coming to somewhere near you. Now it's time for my favorite segment, The Knitter of Note, and we have an awesome person for you today. It's Kate Jacobs. She's the author of the Friday Night Knitting Club, and her new book, Comfort Food, is in stores now. So Kate, what is your personal experience with knitting, or your history with knitting?
Well, you know, I come from a long line of knitters. Both of my grandmothers were knitters. My mom was a crocheter, and my older sister learned to knit from our grandmother, whom we called Nanny. Nanny was a great, great knitter. But I had no interest in doing any of this stuff when I was a kid. I grew up in the 1980s. That's sort of when I, my coming of age years, I guess. I'm almost 35 now. And domestic skills were really derided, and knitting was passé in the 1980s. You know, it's funny to think about it from this vantage point, but that really was the case. And so I absorbed this message from media, from sitcoms. My friends and I, we all did. This idea that if you had any domestic skills, it would somehow impede your ability to be professional. And I was very busy explaining to my mother all these years why I wasn't going to learn how to cook and sew. I definitely wasn't going to learn how to knit, even as I loved all the sweaters my grandmother made for me. Well, fast forward years later, suddenly my friends are all knitting. I call them the secret knitters because they started doing it long before I did. I had no idea that they were all getting into knitting. And by the time I learned, and I taught myself from books and websites, I discovered I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. Now, I'm not the world's best knitter. You know, writing is my main craft, and that's as it should be. I think I lacked a little bit of the coordination to be a really good knitter. But I love it. It's fun. It's soothing. It also makes me feel as though I have this connection with my grandmothers who have passed on. For me, the funniest is when my mom pulled out an old bag of half-finished projects and said, well, good, now you can finally finish these. So that was funny. And of course, they were all in, you know, harvest gold and avocado.
Right, yeah. All those lovely, lovely colors there.
I said, I don't think they sell yarn in these caravans.
So it sounds like you have a little bit in common with Darwin, your character in the book.
You know, it's true. Darwin is very much what I was like when I was about 15. I call it my 15-year-old feminism because, you know, I believed that women were capable of anything, which they are. I was in awe of strong women. I very much wanted to see women in positions of authority and responsibility. All of these things are the same. But the other side of that is that I had sort of this untested certainty about life. And I didn't realize that what I ended up doing by refusing to learn how to cook, for example, was talk myself out of self-sufficiency. You know, I grew up, I ended up having that career that I wanted. I was a magazine editor in New York, and I couldn't even boil water. You know, and so
right.
What I needed to do was learn some steps, and learning how to knit was part and parcel of that. And it really has brought me full circle. And now I enjoy, you know, I enjoy entertaining. I like having people over and cooking for them. I enjoy knitting, and I love to make little things and share them with people. It makes me feel good. And it doesn't, you know, it only enhances my whole life and my work life and all of that. And coming to that realization, you know, and Darwin comes to a similar transition in the book, has been very illuminating for me. It's been a growing experience emotionally.
What made you choose the yarn store as kind of the primary setting for the book? I mean, did you belong to a knitting group at all, or?
You know, I don't belong to a knitting group, and it's funny, I don't belong to any group, which is, you know, I sort of realized after I read the book, gee, I need to join some groups. They sound like so much fun. But the truth is, I have some great groups of friends that we didn't meet over an activity. I mean, the first are the girls I met in first grade, and the other big group are the girls I met at my first job, which was at Red Book magazine. You know, for me, the book is very much about, it picked up on themes, my experience coming from somewhere else. I come from a small town in Western Canada called Hope, British Columbia, beautiful town, and I arrived in New York City to attend graduate school in my early 20s at NYU. And I was very overwhelmed by that experience. And it wasn't until I was at my first job and I met this eclectic and interesting group of young women, and we transitioned from being colleagues to being true friends, that it made the city livable for me, and I really felt I'd found my place. Well, Friday Night Knitting Club is about a group of women coming from somewhere else, and, you know, with all sorts of dreams and ambitions and goals and ideas, but they really don't feel that they have found their place until they find each other, and they find each other at this yarn shop. Well, a yarn shop, they're wonderfully welcoming. You know, they certainly can be, as you know. They have these wonderful explosions of color. But really, there was a place where they all needed to meet. And that really fit. You know, knitting is definitely in the zeitgeist. As a writer, writers often reflect what's in the culture. And so it all seemed to fit. It seemed to fit together. And as I met the characters, you know, when you start writing, it takes you many, many chapters to really feel that you have a handle on the characters and you know them. You know, you develop them through the writing. I mean, starting point ideas, you know, that's a dime a dozen. It's through the writing that you meet the people. And so usually about page 100, you have a sense of who they are and a sense of the story. And then you go back. I always go back and I sort of fix the beginning and make the characters more themselves. They're always changing their personalities a little bit as I'm writing in the beginning. It really made sense. Like, it was very much the appropriate place, I think, for the book. I mean, you know, it's a friendship story, though. And knitters respond to the book because they get the knitting, but non-knitters really do enjoy Friday Night Knitting Club as well. And I hear from them all the time, and they say, well, now I'm going to learn how to knit. And I think that's a great compliment, that they enjoy that aspect of the story so much that they want to take up the craft.
So would you say the non-knitters kind of relate to the friendship aspect, I guess, more than
Absolutely.
Anything else?
Yeah. No, it's a friendship. It is first and foremost a friendship story. It's about the importance of our relationships with other women, how significant that is in each of our lives. And I think it is. You know, I think we do need to have these types of connections. And non-knitters are coming to the story purely as a tale of friendship. And you know, and along the way, they're thinking, maybe I should go to a yarn store, which is great.
So, you know, I noticed throughout the book you had your little kind of knitting metaphors between the chapters about, you know, casting on and things like that. So kind of what about knitting made it so, you know, easy to come up with those metaphors? Or I don't know that it was easy, but what about knitting, you know, kind of fit in with that whole friendship story?
Sure. I don't know if anything in writing is ever really easy, but that's why I laughed. But, you know, the book is divided into, I think it's 10 sections. And they're each keyed up with an aspect of knitting. Knitting, as you know, when you make a mistake, you can just pull out the stitches.
Right.
It works really well for a group of characters who all have regrets. Because when you've made choices and made mistakes, I think we all wish we could just, pull them off our life, you know, pull them off the needle and start again. Now, in real life and for characters, you can't actually do that. There's no time machine. You can't go back in time. But it works very well for this idea of, you know, the do-over, the ultimate do-over. And in knitting, you can end up having a perfect piece, which I never have in my own knitting. I make a mistake and I think, oh, no one will notice, and I forge ahead. And I get to the point where I really don't want to go back, and then you can see it, you know, the hole. I do that all the time.
It's a design element. That's what I always say.
That's right. It says something about my personality, I think, and I do it each and every time. So I have yet to make a perfect anything. But that's, you're right, I like that. It's a design element. That's what I'm going to start saying. That's a design element. You know, but it works for the book because it fits in with the theme of forgiveness and the theme of starting over and second chances. That fits with the characters. You know, writing the section headers only made sense to me when I thought about them, you know, as notes from Georgia to Dakota that work on two levels. Once I thought of that, then, you know, writing them made sense because they fit to me in the story. So they are both about how to make a sweater in a very general way, but they're also, more importantly, about life lessons. And in that sense, they also give us a bit of a foreshadowing of what's coming in the chapters that follow each section header. So they work on several layers with the book. And ultimately, they were a lot of fun to write and really allowed me to think about knitting. And, you know, because I hadn't knit for so very long as I was working on this, what knitting was meaning to me, and how, you know, I felt about, you know, my connection to knitting and my connection to family. You know, there's some there for me, some personal resonance.
So let's talk a little bit about a couple of your characters, because as I was reading the book, I kept getting struck by the independence of some of these women, especially Georgia, who, you know, has these people that come back from her past that she doesn't necessarily want to let in. And even at the beginning with the knitting club, you know, she's kind of like not quite ready to jump on board right away. At least I didn't get that impression. And then you have Kat, this other character who kind of is all about, you know, society and her social life and becomes more independent, you know, whereas Georgia kind of starts letting more people in. So how did you kind of strike that balance when writing about, you know, the importance of being an independent woman while at the same time the importance of, you know, having people that you can surround yourself with that maybe can kind of, you know, not be so strong all the time?
Right, absolutely. Well, you know, I think that there's really three words sort of to keep in mind: independence, dependence, and interdependence. I find it very important in my writing to have characters who are strong and independent and intelligent. You know, I don't have the shrinking violets or, you know, they may be confused, they may be making mistakes, and they're definitely flawed, all of my characters. But they have a core of inner strength, and that's because the women in my life are strong. You know, I want to portray women this way because this is my experience of women. But then I think sometimes people and characters can become too dependent on things. This happens to Kat, actually, in the book, that she moves from being dependent on her husband, and she's in a miserable, miserable marriage. He treats her terribly. To looking to her old friend Georgia to really tell her what to do and what to think and how to behave, she becomes over-reliant, dependent on Georgia. But, you know, the other women of the club, and eventually they all learn this, an interdependence, which is relying on each other, being there for each other while still being independent, still having their own lives. And I think that's what, you know, is sort of the happy balance of life. Because we do need community and connection. We need to have these relationships. Positive relationships are what makes life fulfilling, I believe. And so we do need that. Georgia, in the beginning, has been hurt so many times, she believes that she does not need that. In fact, apart from Anita, her relationship with her old friend Anita, who is more like, you know, is a combination surrogate grandmother to her daughter and best friend to her and, you know, all around good egg. She has that relationship with Anita. But apart from that, you know, she has a professional relationship with her employee Perry, and, you know, a friendly relationship with Marty, who's in the deli below. But she hasn't really opened herself up to really deep and meaningful friendships, and certainly not romantic relationships, after, you know, she was left pregnant and alone by James. And, you know, and she uses her relationship with her daughter, her parenting relationship, and convinces herself that, you know, her life is full with all of these things. Well, her life is busy.
Exactly, yeah.
Thing. But it's not completely full in an emotional sense. There is more that she needs. And through the book, she realizes that reaching out and allowing herself some vulnerability and allowing friends to come in and support her, in fact, makes her stronger. It doesn't make her weaker. And I think it's this lesson about interdependence that's within the book. You know, now Kat transitions from being dependent throughout the book to being both independent and interdependent, in that she maintains her relationship, her relationships that she meets with these women. Lucy and Darwin, now those two are really unlikely friends.
Yeah, that's a really interesting story there with Lucy and Darwin.
Absolutely, you know, and they meet in an unlikely, you know, they meet in a place, they surprise each other, you know, I won't give it away, but they
right, yeah.
Need to see each other. And they make a choice there to keep each other's secrets. And from that confidence, knowing that they won't betray the other, they begin to build a friendship, and they really begin to spend time together and reach out to each other and help each other. And that's really, for both of them, the turning point is this combination of being needed and being available, you know, and helping, you know, being helped and helping. And so the book really is about, you know, a group of strong-minded, mostly independent women, except for Kat, you know, who come together and realize, in fact, they're more alike than different, that we all are looking for many of the same things, that in fact, as they get to know each other, they begin to like each other, even though they are so different from each other. And they are intentionally different. You know, their backgrounds are different. Their professional lives are very different. I gave each of the characters a religion, in fact, simply to accentuate how different they are from each other and to look at this idea of how we are more alike than different. But as we get to know each other, we find out that, you know, there is sort of a universal quality to our experience, and part of what makes life rich is having strong friendships.
And I know all over the country, groups of friends are meeting in book clubs to discuss Friday Night Knitting Club, which, by the way, is a New York Times bestseller, number one now, so congratulations on that.
Thank you. And you know, it's true. The book clubs are great. They have really embraced Friday Night Knitting Club, and I've even already started scheduling book clubs for my new book, Comfort Food, which is neat, and a lot of them are, you know, repeat readers. We've already discussed Friday Night Knitting Club together. We had so much fun that we're doing it again for Comfort Food, the new one. And the thing about the book clubs is that they're mainly, I mean, they're groups of women getting together. And it fits completely in because Friday Night Knitting Club is a story about a group of women getting together. And, you know, I started calling in, telephoning book clubs after a group emailed me and asked me if I would call them. And I said, well, sure. And I blogged about it on my website. And this is also where people can get in touch with me. That's at katejacobs.com. It's just my name, you know, katejacobs.com. And so I did that. And then some more people invited me. And I did that again. And I thought, well, all right, I'll just, you know, put a little button on my site and tell people I do this. And it's taken off from there. I mean, I just, in April, I talked to 40 book clubs about Friday Night Knitting Club. And in May, I went on book tour for Comfort Food. So I was traveling and I said, well, I'm not going to do as many. But I recently counted up my calendar and I'm up to 35 for the month. So I didn't really cut back, did I? I thought I was, but, you know, I make myself very, very available. I've talked to people from the back of cabs, waiting in line in an airport, trying to collect my lost luggage, driving a car. That was a new experience. I thought I would try that, but it worked fine. I had my headpiece on, and so I was hands-free talking. And, yeah, it was great because that way book clubs can ask me their questions. It gives them sometimes new insights. And for me, I can hear their thoughts and feelings about the characters, which is very enriching. And it's just a lot of fun. We laugh a lot. We really do.
What's one of the most interesting questions you've been asked by someone in a book club?
Well, oftentimes people try and guess about my life from reading the book, which is interesting to me. Because, you know, Friday Night Knitting Club is not autobiographical. Even as, I would say, you know, the writer is every character, but none of the characters. And by that I mean parts of you can seep into all of the characters. And even as you can work out sort of personal emotions and feelings through a story, and certainly I did that with Friday Night Knitting Club, and even as some of the characters are like real people, but very often people try and guess what my religion is, which is very interesting to me. You know, or that I'm a single mom. People ask me about that a lot, but I'm not a single mom. In fact, I'm married, and I do not have any children yet. Hopefully someday, but not yet. So that's very interesting to me. That in fact, I think that's a great thing, that people read the book and feel that Georgia feels real enough to them. They think it must be me, that I must be Georgia.
Well, you spoke a second ago about katejacobs.com, but that's not your only website, is it? You have the Walker and Daughter website and also a website for your new book, Comfort Food, that you mentioned. So can you talk Can you talk a little bit about, you know, the creation of those two websites and kind of some of the reactions you've been getting to?
Sure. Absolutely. You know, I tried very, very hard. I spent a lot of time and energy in having a strong presence on the internet. And the reason I do that, well, it just seemed to make sense. I mean, you know, part of knitting's explosion, I think, has been how we're all so accessible to each other online. You know, you can, if you have a question, you can find the answer to it. Then you can read people's blogs and so on and so forth. Well, I have my own website, as I said, katejacobs.com, and I blog there about book tours, and people can find out tour dates, and I'm actually doing more touring throughout the summer. I'm just starting to put on some new cities and make plans for that. But I also have some very specific websites. I built an alternate reality site for Friday Night Knitting Club called walkerandaughter.com. And Walker and Daughter is the name of the fictional yarn shop in Friday Night Knitting Club. And so this was meant to be just a sort of a feel-good site. It existed around a message board. I thought readers, you know, could talk to each other. They could start their own, you know, virtual Friday Night Knitting Clubs and get to know each other. But which did happen. But what also happened is that people began to believe Walker and Daughter was a real store. And even though there's a disclaimer on the site, but it's a bit hidden. And so people would email me and say, you know, can I get a gift certificate? In fact, I just got an email asking for a gift certificate 2 weeks ago, which really made me laugh. Or people will, you know, do I carry this yarn or that yarn? So I, you know, about once a week I'm writing back to someone explaining that, you know, it's not a real store. And of course, when it first went online, I think people simply found it doing a variety of searches and weren't even sure what Friday Night Knitting Club was, but wanted to join. So I get those emails as well. Yes, I'd like to join the club. You know, what time are you meeting this coming Friday? Or my favorite are the sweet, sweet emails when people tell me that I've forgotten to put the address on.
Oh.
And they tell me, well, you know, your business looks great, but it won't do very well if you don't put on the address, dear. And I have to let them know, of course, there is no address because it's not a real yarn shop. Well, I decided that I would do something similar but different for Comfort Food. Similar in the sense that I created a website at comfortfoodnovel.com. And
so they know it's a novel.
That's right, it's comfortfoodnovel.com. So that, first of all, it's very clear right in the URL. But also, it's much more clear that this is about a book. And in fact, it's as though Cooking Channel, that's the fictional cable network in Comfort Food, is celebrating the release of a book about the cast of one of its shows, and that book is called Comfort Food. And, you know, it's divided into three sections. There's a tab just called Comfort Food where you can read the first chapter online. You can read a little bit of, you know, snippets of reviews, a letter I wrote to readers, and you can get discussion questions for book clubs. There's also another tab called Eat, Drink, and Be, which is the name of the fictional cooking show that forms the basis of Comfort Food. And Comfort Food is a book, it's a lighthearted, fun book all about the host of a TV cooking show and the personal and professional challenges going on in her life. And, you know, it's a very upbeat story. And the Eat, Drink, and Be section has quizzes about, you know, the cast, i.e. the characters. And it also, you know, it has an online game, and it just has a lot of fun things. You can continue the feeling of the book. You can pretend it's real. That's the alternate reality component, really, right there. And then there's a whole recipe section, and it's literally a large database where I put up recipes, my friends are putting up recipes, and readers are putting up recipes. And we're just sharing dishes back and forth. There also are recipes for the dishes that inspire some of the episodes of Eat, Drink, and Be, the fictional show, and Comfort Food. And some of those are recipes from friends, and some of them are old family recipes that I've put up with the full permission of my mother and the somewhat, you know, reluctant permission of my older sister. And, you know, that's a lot of fun. And so it's really just, it's a site to continue on, you know, the community of Comfort Food.
So it sounds like the world of comfort food is somewhere that Dakota would be pretty comfortable, right?
Well, I think, you know, Dakota would be. I mean, it's, you know, she's not in the book. It's definitely a standalone story with new characters. You know, it's not related to Friday Night in a Club in any way. It's its own story. But, you know, it does pick up for me. You know, when I was a kid, I never wanted to cook. I didn't want to do that. But I did love to bake. And I still enjoy baking. Now I enjoy cooking as well. And I love food television. So comfort food really picks up on my love of, watching TV, of watching people cook on TV and how fun that is. And that's very popular these days. A lot of my friends enjoy that. There's something about, well, think of when we're young and how nice it was to sit around when our grandmothers were cooking and you'd sit in the kitchen and you'd sort of, it would be a very comfortable, soothing time. I think we get a little bit of that watching food television, and we're pretty far from our families, many of us. So it's a way to get a feeling of home. And Comfort Food is a book about the power of food to bring people together. It's about a woman dealing with her two 20-something daughters, and as they do that mother-daughter dance of redefinition, the mother wanting her daughters to realize that she's not just their parent, and the daughters wanting their mother to realize that they're more than just little kids. And it's also about work life. And once again, I have focused very much on creating strong, independent, entrepreneurial characters. That's very important to me. I do that intentionally because, you know, I think there's it's very important to me that the women I portray are smart and strong and funny. And so Comfort Food picks up on that. And it's about the world of work and what we're willing to do to get ahead, and how what we may have wanted at one point can be different at a later point, and figuring that out and defining ourselves, not allowing ourselves to be defined by others' expectations. And all of that said, it's really just meant to be a fun book.
And speaking of kind of strong entrepreneurial women, you have Julia Roberts, who I guess loved Friday Night Knitting Club, and there's going to be a movie, correct?
That's right, and it's wonderfully exciting. Universal Studios optioned the movie rights for Julia Roberts to be Georgia and to produce it with her own production company, which is really wonderful. And what's funny about it, of course, is that if you've read Friday Night Knitting Club, there's this tiny little section in which an unnamed character comes into the fictional yarn shop looking for Julia Roberts. And that was meant to be a nod to celebrity knitters, because really, that has helped fuel the resurgence of knitting when so many movie stars started knitting. And Julia Roberts is a big knitter, and she's well known as a knitter. So, you know, that little mention is kind of a funny thing, especially now that all that's, you know, happened. It's sort of life imitating book, I guess. And so that's very fortunate. I don't think that is at all why Julia Roberts chose Friday Night Knitting Club. I think it's the strong characters, the, you know, ensemble cast of characters. I think that's what drew her to it. And I'm just delighted. Just delighted.
One of my yarn shop opera wanted to know if you ever imagined Julia kind of as Georgia as you were writing the book.
Not really. I tend to see my characters as themselves when I imagine them. But Julia Roberts certainly has the hair to be Georgia.
You know, I kept thinking that as I was reading it.
Right. And, you know, Georgia has this wonderful curly hair. And, yeah, I think she'd be it's one of those things when someone says Julia Roberts is Georgia, you think it's perfect. It's perfect. So I'm just very excited.
One more question. What is your favorite thing to knit? Let's wrap up with a knitting question here.
Sure. Well, my favorite thing to knit is anything that's fast and easy. I got into knitting baby blankets because all my friends were having babies. And I started trying to knit them on tiny needles. I thought, well, I should make these delicate, wonderful things, you know, and baby blue and powder pink and all of that. And I type so much that my wrists can get very sore.
Right.
So I was talking about that with a yarn shop owner one time, and she said, you really need to use large needles. Well, this opened up a whole new world for me. I never use needles smaller than 15 now. I tend to use 19 and just make huge, chunky baby blankets and love it. I absolutely love it. It doesn't take too long. And I love that instant gratification. You know, writing a book takes a long time. I don't need my knitting pieces to take so long. I need them to be done quickly so I can have that thrill of finishing something.
That was Kate Jacobs, author of the Friday Night Knitting Club. Her new book is Comfort Food. I want to say thank you again to Kate and to Ben for allowing me to make them part of the program. I also want to thank Chris Fitzgerald for letting me use his mic, and Craig Wagner, my husband. He wrote the theme, and he was a big part in helping to make this happen. If you would like to learn more about anything you've heard here, you can visit the website, www.theshiznit.com. That's T-H-E-S-H-I-Z-K-N-I-T. On the Shiznit, you'll find notes from the program, and also a free pattern, the Confection Baby Shrug. Baby patterns are great for practicing skills, including picking up and knitting stitches. If you're on Ravelry, you can download this pattern directly into your library. It's available in English and in Finnish. That's it for the Shiznit podcast. Thanks for tuning in to the first episode, and we'll be back next month.
That's wonderful. I think we've talked about all sorts of things. I'm really thrilled about this, Tanya. It's a lot of fun. I really enjoy talking to bloggers, and everyone's been so supportive of the book, and I appreciate it tremendously. And if people want to find out more, just come to my website, kjacobs.com, or comfortfoodnovel.com, or walkmydaughter.com.
Well, thank you so much, Kate. And I will email you when this goes live on the internet, probably about 2 weeks from now.
Okay, that sounds great. Thanks, Tanya.
All right, thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.